Well, this morning, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi wrote a letter to Speaker Paul Ryan, urging him to call the House back in session from recess to ensure that Congress lives up to its constitutional responsibility of debating a new war authorization. Now, the current authorizations for military force date back to the 2001 9/11 attacks and the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Since then, Congress rejected President Obama's calls for authorizations in Libya, in Syria. So the old 2001 authorization covers fighting ISIS terrorists. But President Trump's attack was against the government in Syria, not ISIS, and some lawmakers believe it needs congressional approval. There's also been bipartisan support for the strikes, some tempered. Here's Senator John McCain, chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee on MSNBC.
I think it was appropriate, but I would like to say, despite all the enthusiasm we see this morning, if I might quote Churchill, it's the end of the beginning, not the beginning of the end.
Let's bring in the Friday Roundtable. Rick Klein, political director at ABC News, and Maria Elena Salinas, news anchor at Univision. Welcome to you both.
Hello. Good to talk to you.
President Trump's hard-right nationalist supporters, Maria Elena, are blasting him. Some alt-right outlets don't even believe there was a gassing. They think it's a false flag to draw the U.S. in. But establishment Republicans, liberals like Nick Kristof, are approving of the strikes. Hillary Clinton called for them before they happened. Tell us more about this scramble in Washington as people, you know, decide how they feel about this.
I know. It's interesting because everyone's focusing now on the political fight in Congress over more than the consequences of this attack. I mean, besides the bilateral support that we are seeing in Congress, you know, there's also international support from U.S. allies. So far, around a dozen countries have expressed their support, including the U.K., Germany, France, Israel, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia. The question is, will that support turn into action? And will these countries be part of a coalition if there is more military action? You know, I think right now everyone is reacting to this one event, but right now there are so many more questions than there are answers. What is next? Will there be more strikes? Will Trump declare war on Syria unilaterally? Will he go to Congress and ask for approval?
Yeah, Rick Klein, what are questions for you?
I want to know what the Trump doctrine is, because we now know that the president is willing to rewrite his own doctrine, ignore what he has said as a candidate, ignore what he has maintained his administration policy up until a couple of days ago, based just on one event. And it was a horrific event, and the photos were shocking. But the fact that that permitted him in his mind to change course just 80 days into this administration, just less than 80 hours after the incident itself, suggests a decisiveness, maybe an unpredictability. And I think a kind of freewheeling decision-making nature that a lot of folks around the world are trying to figure out, because this is not the President Trump that we thought we'd get from the campaign. It's not the man who seemed to project himself onto the world stage throughout as an answer to both Obama and Bush, the last two presidents of each party.
Well, President Trump said on the campaign trail, "I'm not the president of the world." And Marco Rubio is one who's praising him today, but he was one who suggested that the Trump administration may have emboldened Syrian President Assad to even make that apparent gas attack, because just last week, Trump's Secretary of State said regime change in Syria was not a U.S. priority. Maria Elena, I'm thinking of some other fallout issues there might be. Last night you tweeted, "Will Trump now change his mind on accepting Syrian refugees? Those victims of the gas attack he's deploring are the ones that look for refuge."
Exactly. I think that's one of the first things that came to my mind when you hear Trump talk about these poor babies and these poor kids, and you see these images of you know, people who were attacked, laying dead, mothers, babies, men who lost their entire family. You know, those are the very refugees fleeing from Syria, trying to find a home elsewhere to raise their families in peace. So I'm wondering if he changed his—is he changing his mind on regime change? Is he changing his mind on whether or not he wants to get involved in Syria? Will he also change his mind on accepting more Syrian refugees? And maybe that executive order that freezes all refugees from entering the country for 90 days, maybe he won't fight it in the courts anymore.
We'll see. I mean, it's the Colin Powell line, if you break it, you own it. Rick, what else is going on here? These strikes take place as there was an apparent power struggle between Trump's chief strategist, Steve Bannon, pulled from the National Security Council, and Trump's son-in-law and advisor, Jared Kushner. Kushner is said to be winning. What's going on here?
Well, if you needed an example of Bannon losing, it would seem to be intervention in Syria. This is exactly the kind of globalist mindset in Bannon's view that he tends to oppose. We don't know what private advice he gave to the president. There has been a pretty fierce influence struggle that includes, by the way, Secretary of State Tillerson, as well as the Defense Secretary, Jim Mattis. And they have, by all accounts, aligned more with Jared Kushner, who has become something of a conduit to Capitol Hill and some of the Republican establishment voices. So a whole big scrambling going on, but I think a move away from the ideology of Steve Bannon, which was very skeptical about any kind of intervention, any kind of adventurism in the Middle East as he would see it. And I think this is a pretty dramatic example of that fading influence.
One quick question, Maria Elena, we just have a few seconds, but we have a new Supreme Court Justice, Gorsuch. Is the Senate going to heal from how that
I don't know. I think that this whole issue with the nuclear option and the filibuster, it just shows how divided Congress is. And even though Democrats try to justify their filibuster, it really, the move might have backfired on them, because not only do they still get Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, but now all future nominees will be confirmed with a simple majority.
Right.
So unless Democrats regain power in the Senate, the country will have a conservative-leaning Supreme Court for the foreseeable future.
Maria Elena Salinas of Univision, Rick Klein of ABC News. To be continued. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.